In March 1938, the German army marched into Austria. Throughout 1938, international tension mounted as the German government massed troops on the Czechoslovak border. Meanwhile, in Britain, the secretary of the Institute of Accountants and Actuaries in Glasgow wrote to his English counterpart that
some of our delegates are a little uneasy about the political situation.
He was uneasy because a party of Britain's top accountants was due to travel to Berlin for the 5th International Congress on Accounting. The Congress was scheduled for September, but as the date drew near, the anxious British accountants held consultations at the Foreign Office. The secretary of the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales was very keen to secure attendance at the Congress. But why? Stephen Walker from Cardiff University has studied the affair.
A number of the international accounting firms had begun to open offices in continental Europe during the interwar years. And one of the principal locations was in Berlin. A considerable amount of American and British capital had flowed into Germany after the First World War, and accounting firms followed the capital and were there to keep an eye on it and audit a lot of the investments which had taken place. So Berlin was an important centre for the expansion of some of the international accounting firms in the 1920s and especially in the 1930s. So there was a sense in which it was deemed appropriate to protect the interests of the firms which had opened up in Berlin in a situation where there was a good deal of political uncertainty.
The German accountancy profession had already been taken over by the Nazis, who had largely purged it of Jews. But it wasn't concern for the Jews that motivated the delegates to the Congress.
Were the British accountants and the American accountants worried that the Nazis might take over their own offices and subsume them into the Nazification of the whole German accounting profession?
There was the threat of that, and there was also the threat that the firms would be expelled from the country.
But they needn't have worried. Everything was fine.
The attendees were received incredibly well. They were lavishly entertained.
A programme of concerts, theatre, opera, banquets and a ball was organised. On the fourth day, the accountants and their wives were taken on a steamer trip down the River Havel, during which they were entertained by the band of a labour camp. Several of the Nazi top brass put in an appearance.
The Minister of Economic Affairs, Funk, was there, as was a Dr. Hans Frank, who was a leading lawyer and at the time was minister without portfolio.
Goering sent a telegram, so did Hitler. Hans Frank, who was later hanged for war crimes, told the Congress that an organised and competent accountancy profession was the vehicle for the implementation of National Socialist policies. None of this seemed to alarm the well-fed British delegates. During a discussion of accounting for depreciation, the London representative announced,
"After nearly 1 week of your bountiful hospitality, we are only too conscious of a realisation of wear and tear of our digestive organs. Whereas our contact with the virile members of the German accounting profession, as represented by those who have organised this Congress, has regenerated us."
By the end of the week, the seduction was complete. The president of the Society of Accountants in Edinburgh was fulsome in his gratitude.
"I want to say, quite frankly, that I have enjoyed every moment of my time in Germany. I am going to be political just for one little bit and say that I came here under a rather serious misapprehension. But when I return to my own country of Scotland, I shall tell how I have changed my mind and how I found things so very much better than we had thought."
Of course, it did no good. Within a few weeks, British accountants were expelled from Germany, and within 12 months, Britain and Germany were at war. During the next 6 years, German accounting and accountants played an important, if little recognised, role in the Holocaust. Warwick Fennell, Professor of Accounting at the University of Kent.
Very little attention has been directed towards accountants. The medical profession, the legal profession have attracted most of the attention primarily because they are the most obvious, the most visible. But accounting has tended to escape attention. Most of the impact of accounting was felt through the German civil bureaucracy, the civil servants who were responsible for bringing together the Jews, that is, making sure they were collected, making sure that they were loaded onto trains, transported, etc. And they also did in costings. For example, the Gestapo, who was responsible for the transportation, was charged by the Reichsbahn 4 pfennig, I think it was, per kilometre. And children were charged 2, and if you were under 10, they would travel free. So they just became a commodity. Putting a number on the Jewish people allowed them to be commodified, allowed them to be denied their humanity.
The SS leased Jewish prisoners to industry, and SS accountants produced figures showing the expected profits. One income statement is calculated on a projected life expectancy per prisoner of 9 months. A line at the bottom shows revenue at death, what could be made from the sale of the body itself, from hair, fat and ashes. But even as Jewish bodies and property were looted, accountancy was being used to square Nazi consciences.
Himmler wanted to create a sense of moral behaviour on the part of the people who were responsible for the murder of the Jews. And to do that, he used accounting as a means to sanctify what they were doing. He insisted there had to be a painstaking exactness, that they were his words, in all dealings with Jewish property. And he warned that we cannot be accurate enough in dealing with this property taken from the Jews. He demanded meticulous accounting, and to ensure that this exact punctilious accounting for everything that was there, down to a hairpin, he said, and this was a directive he sent out to all SS officers on October the 4th, 1943, he said, "Anyone who takes so much as a single mark of this money is a dead man."
So by accounting for the theft, this inherently immoral process is somehow cleansed.
It was a means of redemption. It was a means of ensuring that their inner self would be protected.
If accounting can be used to make the unethical acceptable, it can also be used to promote an explicit moral agenda. That's what happened in mid-19th century Ireland, devastated by the potato famine. The colonial government in London responded to the mass starvation with a programme of relief, but it came with strings attached. Philip O'Regan of Limerick University.
The authorities really became captive to the political philosophy of the time, which really was that if relief was to be given, it should be earned, and that there was a class of people called the deserving poor who should be helped out. The Irish population were viewed as a population who could be improved. The relief system very quickly became one that was intended to both deal with the food shortage itself, but specifically also to improve the kind of moral fibre of the Irish labourer.
Was the famine seen in any way as a happy opportunity to do this, to reform the Irish population?
Well, it was. Charles Trevelyan at the Treasury, he said, "God grant that we may rightly perform our part and not turn into a curse what was intended for a blessing."
Nearly a million people were set to work on schemes that were deliberately useless, roads to nowhere and walls no one wanted, and to make it all work, an army of accountants.
There was a very, very big accounting architecture introduced to accompany this scheme, because all of the work that was done had to be recorded, the rates at which it should be paid had to be calculated, amounts had to be distributed. There were at least 100 people that we would term accountants. There were several hundred supporting bookkeepers. There were another several hundred pay clerks that were involved in distributing funds and so on. So you can see that fairly quickly you have the development of a fairly significant accounting infrastructure that really was growing exponentially as the numbers that were being given relief were growing hugely.
Accountants took an even more hands-on role in another rural tragedy, some would say genocide, taking place at about the same time, the Highland clearances. Many Scottish Highland estates went bankrupt and were placed in the hands of trustees, often professional accountants from Edinburgh. Stephen Walker again.
Their primary responsibility was to satisfy the creditors. and secure a return at whatever the cost in terms of the tenantry. One of the best known examples of this was a gentleman named James Brown, who was principal accountant of his day in mid-19th century Edinburgh. Brown was particularly known for his management of the estates of Lord MacDonald on Skye, and had a strong reputation for descending on an estate and taking quite a cold view of the affairs of the estate. And that led to some quite well-known evictions from the estate in Skye.
All of a sudden, Lord MacDonald's ground officer and constables arrived and proceeded at once to eject the unfortunate people. The women and children went about tearing their hair and rending the heavens with their cries. Mothers, with their tender infants at the breast, could do nothing but look on while their effects and their aged and infirm relations were cast out and their doors locked in their faces. All were indiscriminately thrust out and left to perish on the hills.
The decision-making that they took didn't always seem to be based on kind of economic rational view of the world. That's one of the most surprising findings of studying these characters. There are examples of Brown making decisions about particular families and evictions which seem to be justified in his mind by the fact that the evicted families were not adhering to the highest moral standards or were not as industrious as one would expect.
Grown-up men and women are found on inquiry to be unable to read or write. Several have never been within the walls of a church. Feelings of humanity, pity, and benevolence actuated the trustees in the removal of these people to a more favoured locality, to say nothing of the responsibility in permitting ignorance to prevail where it can possibly be avoided by those in the management of property so densely populated.
I think he had a mission. Another very famous example of this was the eviction of families from the estates of Ardna Merkin, and the accountant who was particularly involved in that was a gentleman named Thomas Goldie Dixon, who preceded his trusteeship of the estate by performing himself a large survey of every family on the estate. He made assumptions and collected information about their morals and of their personal habits, and recommended eviction of, for example, an individual farmer who was living with a woman who was not his wife. So we have quite clear examples that decision-making in these circumstances was not entirely based on economic, rational decision-making.
Accountants have a reputation for dullness, but can dullness be a mask? Warwick Fennell.
Most people's perception of accounting is that it deals in neutral, unbiased details, when in fact accounting is a moral activity. Accountants never report just the facts. What they have to decide upon is what to measure, and when they do that, they give visibility to certain things by putting a number on something. It gives it a visibility, and once you give certain things a visibility, other things, they become inconsequential.
Such as humanity? As accountants might say, go figure.